Welcome to Assembly Line, the podcast for entrepreneurs building on the Salesforce platform. We'll go behind the scenes with innovative founders and leaders to share their stories, strategies, and lessons to accelerate your own path to success as a Salesforce ISV. Are you struggling to make sense of the Salesforce security review? It's the number one roadblock slowing down your AppExchange launch. Security Review Partner translates those complex reports into a simple, prioritized checklist. Stop deciphering jargon and start shipping faster. Get the clear, step-by-step guidance you need to pass the review with confidence. Simplify your path to market. Visit securityreviewpartner.com today. That's securityreviewpartner.com. So today I am happy to be joined by Warren Walters, the Chief Programmer Path Planning Officer and founder of Cloud Code Academy. Welcome, Warren.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, Scott. And you know, when you're your founder, you're able to make up your own titles and all of that stuff. So I might as well join in with the club with having a random title.
I love it. Especially because in addition to our Salesforce experience, we share in common a love for Star Wars. And so I know that the Chief Programmer Path Planning Officer, another way to put that would be C-3PO.
You nailed it. You always have to throw something in there to keep the people on their toes, right? Find the true believers.
Yep. All right. Well, so honestly, I think a lot of listeners will probably be very familiar with you and all of your YouTube video content and your Salesforce training. But just for those that might not, maybe you could share a little bit about your background and Cloud Code Academy.
Sure. So yeah, I'm Warren Walters. I've been in the Salesforce ecosystem for I'd say 10 plus years. I stopped counting at this point, doing all sorts of things, consulting, in-house development, working at ISVs, building applications. And now more recently, I have been doing Cloud Code Academy, which is focused on training people in Salesforce development. So all of this stemmed from a love of sharing Salesforce and more technical things with people. And I started out making a lot of different YouTube videos in Salesforce and technology, and all of that kind of grew into the fully fledged program, which is Cloud Code Academy, cohort style, bringing you in, training you up on a lot of the different aspects of Salesforce development, like integrations, LWCs, and even just the beginnings and the basics. So it's been a fun journey to go from that standpoint of, you know, just learning Salesforce from the beginning, not knowing what it is at all, to 10 years later, having a business in the Salesforce ecosystem, being a workforce development partner, becoming an MVP, being on the CAB. So like, it's been a really long journey, but I've enjoyed my career in Salesforce and really focusing in on that sort, that little piece of development.
Very cool. Yeah, I definitely want to double click on the workforce development partnership that you mentioned with Salesforce. I think a lot of listeners are familiar with the SI route as well as the ISV route, and as you just mentioned, you've sat on both sides of that fence. But I think that that people are less familiar with this other type of partnership that Salesforce offers. So maybe you could share a little bit about what that entails.
Yeah, being a workforce development partner, it's kind of a broad term or a broad circle that you're in, but it's generally along the lines of your business somehow trains people on Salesforce, right? So this can be in Salesforce administration, Salesforce development, which we focus on, or even more soft skills, or you can even just help people get into Salesforce roles. So like pseudo doing placements, and there's a bunch of different types of people that exist in there, but you generally specialize and provide some sort of like training and collaboration with Salesforce and the people who are needed to work on the platform. So Cloud Code really focuses on the development lens. We bring people in, get them trained on PD1, get them to master like the basics of Apex, and then we try to help you find different roles. So that partnership or that type of business partners well with Salesforce, since they do training, but you know, it's only one part of their business, where Cloud Code and the other workforce development partners, they focus in on just doing the training, or a lot of what they do is the training. But so that partnership with Salesforce allows us to work closely with their internal teams that are over this, figure out different learning resources and information that we should be sharing with our different students. And there's a good understanding of how we can impact, right, the individuals and then take them to actually getting a job and working on the Salesforce platform, right? And all of this, it's mutually beneficial for us as individual business owners and then Salesforce as a company, because if you have well-trained people, the building on the platform, deploying on the platform, consulting on the platform, then it just raises the bar and it makes sure that the customers that are using Salesforce are actually getting the value that they need out of it and that the personnel that they're bringing on for it.
Got it. It makes sense. So I've been lucky enough to know you for a number of years now. I think we first met back in 2019.
Yeah.
And at that time, I believe that was, I believe it was early days of your YouTube content and videos. But clearly you've had a passion for education and training for a long time now. And I'm just curious, when that, if we rewind back to those early days, was this always the plan to eventually grow and scale, or were you just putting out that content to put it out there into the world? And over time you realized that there was a business to be had.
Yeah. It's so funny that you bring up this relationship that we've had for such a long time, right? I know, you know, we were working together on some different projects and it was so long ago. And I think back to it very fondly, right? Just because, it was early days for me. I know you are a lot more experienced at that standpoint, and we were just kind of working together to build out some really cool stuff and some projects. And you know, it's I don't know how many years, like 5-6 years later, and now we're talking again. And it's a very like humbling, very interesting thing to retrospect on. But for my YouTube journey and all the content that I've been putting out, I didn't really have a master plan about it. Salesforce is super niche, so I never thought that it was going to, you know, blow up or I'm going to be the next Mr. Beast of Salesforce and all that stuff. No, that definitely wasn't on my mind back then. I was just making content because I found it fun and interesting. And a really great way to learn is to teach other people. So whenever I'm making a video, whenever I'm making content, I have to learn it enough to be able to distill it down and to be able to explain it to other people. And it becomes a skill that you can build up in a way that you can learn a lot. Now, over time, I started to see like, hey, people are leaving these comments. People are requesting more of my time. So I did certain things like make the Slack groups where people can join and just chat and talk with me, or have the office hours where people can jump in and you know, ask questions and we can go through things. And as I'm building all of that stuff out, people are asking for more and more content, more and more material. And at a certain point, you kind of see like you're giving a lot. You potentially, you know, you want to make sure that you're being paid for your time that you're creating it. And people are asking for like premium content and that kind of stuff. So I took the plunge and started making, you know, little courses, modules. You can think of them like Udemy courses for development that people were asking about. And then eventually that turned into the bigger Cloud Code Academy curriculum and process and all of that stuff that goes into like training somebody really well. Because there's a huge difference between like a $10 Udemy course and like a flagship cohort style journey that you're going to bring somebody to transform their career. Because I don't know about you, but I've bought many $10 Udemy courses and never completed them. You know, any like, you know, anything over $500, $1,000 where it's really a journey and transformation, I know that I'm going to be really focused on getting that done and absorbing as much info as I can through that. So all that to say, it wasn't planned, but it definitely started to materialize as the community asked for more of this type of content.
Yes. Well, on behalf of the community, thank you, because I think it makes sense that eventually a business would form out of it, because like, as you said, you know, if it's free forever, then that's going to always kind of put a ceiling, I think, on the kind of premium content you can provide and the amount of time you could dedicate to it. But I also think it's great that, you know, you've worked, like we already talked about, a number of different number of different roles in the ecosystem. So you have experience on the SI side as well as the ISV side. And I feel like you can bring that into your development training courses, right? For regardless of whether someone going through one of your cohorts wants to form their own ISV one day, like a lot of listeners here probably would, or if they want to go more toward the consulting route and form an SI or join an SI, your content is going to help them with that. So I think that's great.
Yeah.
And it's also great. We have so many shared experiences too, but it's funny. It was funny to see that one of the ISVs you worked with was Blackthorn, right? And Chris was just on the show in a recent episode. So Blackthorn's a great ISV. They've been around for a long time. So I'm sure that was a nice experience for you.
Yeah. Blackthorn, love working there. I've got to catch up on the episode, but I'm hoping that Chris mentioned, you know, all of the interesting things that they are doing, right? One, just for example, is like the four-day work week that they have, which is very rare, even, you know, in this tech day to have, but also the way that they have built out their applications and how it evolved over time, right? Because Blackthorn has multiple apps on the App Exchange, and it's very, working there is very eye-opening to some of the limitations, some of the things that you think about when you are an ISV and how to build those out. And a lot of that I translate to my students as they are learning, because everyone has like these amazing ideas, or if you don't, I'll say everyone, but if you're going through your day, and especially if you're in the Salesforce world, and sometimes you like run into issues and you're like, oh, that's annoying. Why do I have to click these three things? And for me, I write that down. I'm like, okay, this could be an app. Like, why don't we build this out and all of this stuff, right? I put myself in that mind frame. But if you are, you know, going through your day, and if you learn the skills, you can actually build out those applications that can solve the problems that you are struggling with. So I know bringing it back to Blackthorn, they saw a lot of those things, and they have a bunch of applications now that solve different, very complex problems that people have faced. And it was really cool to see that, be a part of that journey that they went on to build out these apps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They talked a little bit about that on the episode. I'll let you go back and watch it. But I could tell. I know Blackthorn's been working on some really cool stuff, augmenting the platform. But transitioning back to Cloud Code Academy, now that you have, you know, started to reach some scale, I'm curious, are the videos and the content still 100% produced by you, or have you been able to expand out from there and pull in other mentors and teachers into the program to help run more cohorts?
This is a really great question, because like short answer is yes, I have started to expand out and have other people help with the content. And at this point, you kind of have to, right? I can't know it all. Recently, I started working with somebody you may or may not know. Her name is Kimberly Small. She has an app on the App Exchange that she launched recently. But she's like a more of an expert than I am in flows and in development, right? She knows them really well. And we were just talking one day. We were actually at a Dreaming conference. Shout out Dreaming in Color. If you haven't gone, definitely go. For all the listeners, right? You go to your local Dreaming conferences. But we met there and we're talking about Cloud Code and different content. And I saw her presentation and I was like, hey, this would be really great if there was a more like structured way of delivering your content. So we worked together and we built out the Flow to Code, which is basically a course that takes you from the concepts that a lot of admins and consultants already know, which is around flows and how to do a flow loop and how to set variables in flow and how to translate that into Apex, right? So you're taking something that you know and then translating it over to something that you potentially don't know. But the really cool part is that you will start to realize that logic is logic, right? Programming is programming regardless of the language that you're using. So if you know flows pretty well, you can translate that over to Apex pretty easily, right? So that's one example, but I've now started to delegate and work with a lot of different people to build out things that I just, I'm either not an expert on, or I would love to have another opinion on. And then working on, like, I started getting video editors for certain things that I'm creating, and like marketing people to help with some of the messaging that I'm doing. So all of this is just like wrapped up in learning how to run a business properly, where when it was just me and I was just cranking out videos, doing bad thumbnails, it was easy, right? It was light. But now that it's, you know, a business, I've got contractors and instructors that are helping with the program, it really starts to expand out, and my role starts to get a little bit higher level, where I need to think about the business instead of just thinking about like the individual piece of content.
Sure. Working on the business, not in the business, yeah. Right? I think is the phrase people are familiar with. That's very cool. Okay. Is YouTube still your primary channel, or are you seeing traction on, you know, LinkedIn? I know some folks post on Instagram, things like that. Or is YouTube still your main source of traffic?
My primary channels are LinkedIn and YouTube, I will say.
Okay.
You know, if you follow me, you know I post like every other day at least. It does become a little, I don't want to say nauseating, but it does become a little, like it sometimes is easy for me to post and sometimes it's not, right? I got to really think about it. And then YouTube, sure. I've built up such a big catalog now, where, you know, if you're just starting out, you may need to, I'd recommend like one video a week or every other week kind of situation. But I've built up such a big catalog now that people are seeing my content for whatever they are searching, right? Especially if it's more technical, I probably have a topic on it or a video on it. So I've tried the other ones. I've tried like TikTok. Didn't try Instagram. I don't know if it fits my style and my content as much to do an Instagram, but TikTok is a little bit easier, right? I can take the long form content, chop it up and put it on there for at least the snippets. But I haven't put as much focus in on TikTok. I post on Twitter. I post on Blue Sky, but I don't personally get as much traction on it.
I see. Yeah, I would imagine you said you have such a vast catalog at this point. You've been doing it for so many years. I would imagine that it's kind of a snowball effect, though, right? I mean, I wonder if you remember some of your earlier videos and the kind of view count you were getting, and if you ever felt like you were shouting into a void. I mean, I feel like now you probably would post a video, Warren, and there are a lot, you get a lot of eyeballs right away because you're such a known entity in the Salesforce ecosystem. But for anyone out there that's like, you know, maybe wants to follow in your footsteps and they feel that they're an expert in some corner of the platform, they want to share their knowledge. I'd be curious if you could share some like realistic expectations they should have on, you know, the early days of, you know, what was it like for you in your first videos? Did you feel you were shouting into the void for a while?
For sure. I mean, it is hard. It was hard. It's hard today to make content in this sort of niche, right? If you think about it, right, you've got the tech space, which is generally pretty big. Then you've got, you know, software that you can build on, and some of them are bigger than others. Salesforce is generally pretty big. But if you like talk to your parents about Salesforce, you're like, oh, you work at the sales team? Like, I you know, what is Salesforce and all this kind of stuff? And then like even more, right, we're drilling in to that niche even further, right? It's okay, Salesforce developers and Salesforce developers that want to learn technical content and all, or even like Salesforce professionals and then Salesforce developers on top of that. So the people that are interested in watching this sort of content, right, it's not just like the general masses and the general entertainment. So you cannot expect to get thousands, millions of views on content that you're putting out in the Salesforce ecosystem just because people aren't looking for it that much, right? I rarely watch Salesforce content for entertainment. So all that being said, you have to be realistic with the like numbers and the expectations that you have for putting out this content. And I was definitely shouting into the void, like you mentioned, for some of the earlier content, you know, getting like 5, 10 views on certain things that are coming through. But what really helped me to keep going on is like, you'll get that one comment on like, especially when you start out, right? You put out one, like 5 or 6 videos, get only 100 views across all of them, but you get one comment throughout that. And it's like, oh, this really solved my problem. This like saved me hours of searching and hours of work. And like that definitely starting out is what made it for me and helped me continue to work on it. Some pieces around it too were on the skill of public speaking, on the skill of video editing. It's something you practice and something you build up over time. And you know, I think it's like Ali Abdallah, one of the creators that I follow, is like, your first 100 videos are going to suck, right? But you're going through that process to figure out your style, figure out your voice, figure out how to make content. So on once you get to like 101 or the 200th video, you kind of know what you're doing. You can get it down from that standpoint. And this goes for any type of content, right? Not just making videos, but think about writing blogs or doing podcasts or even just content on LinkedIn, posting on LinkedIn, right? There's definitely a learning curve that goes to all of it. And then the beginning, right? Don't get discouraged if you're not getting a huge amount of views or, you know, engagement on your content, because it's all of that builds up to you learning and being successful in the end, right? If I stopped way earlier on, you know, back in 2019 when we met, I could have just, you know, stopped there and we would probably either not be having this conversation or be having a completely different one at this point. So yeah, I encourage anybody to dive into content. It's been very beneficial for my career overall, but it takes time, right? You're not going to go to sleep, post one video, go to sleep and be, you know, a mega star after that. It takes a lot of time to build this type of content and brand up.
Well, I hope that one day I'll be publishing my 100th episode and be able to look back and cringe at some of the early ones.
I want to be back for the 100th episode. Goal. Call me
all
back.
Right. Put it in your calendar. Put it in your calendar. Do you remember how long by calendar time it took before you felt like you were starting to see more traction with your videos?
I would say for traction on my content, probably at year 3 or 4 is when I really started feeling good traction for it. But what I will caveat this with is there were stints in my content creation journey, I'll say, that I just took a break, right? It's like, oh, I'll do 6 months off, or, you know, just something popped up during that time. So like I wasn't as consistent as I should have been to get there faster, right? But if you are consistent and you're really putting in effort to learn how to do this stuff, then you can definitely reach it faster than, you know, the 3 or 4 year mark that it took me.
Yeah. Still though, I mean, like you said, it takes time. And so I just wanted to dive in on kind of your journey a little bit, because I think people would look at you now and wouldn't believe that there was a time when you ever weren't C-3PO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's weird too, because like, you know, I'll go to conferences, I'll talk to people on one-on-ones, and like people are afraid of me now. They're like, oh, you know, you're Warren Walters and all this. I was like, no, I'm literally just Warren. I'm nobody special. I started out just like you. The only difference between me and you is time, right? I've just been doing this for a long time, and that's it. So yeah, my journey overall, it's a part of just learning in general and making sure to document the things that I am learning as I go along. And you can kind of see that in my content. You can see it as I start to switch different roles, as I start to learn more, I start talking about different things, you know, more technical things. I move from like a lot of flow content to a lot of developer content halfway through, you know, a lot of my YouTube videos, because that's what I'm focusing in on more. And that's what I'm finding a lot of passion about and that I want to talk about. But it's really about making sure that wherever you're working, whatever you're doing, you are learning as much as you can. And I like to share, right? I like to share that learning and help people along the way. And maybe that is not the default mode that some people are in, but I would encourage you to do that. Cause what, let's say like rising tide lift all boats, right? Like I'm now able to learn from people that were my students or people who I've hired, right? I have now surpassed me in the development realm and I have them as instructors in Cloud Code Academy, right? So all of the like learning and the teaching that you do, it all comes full circle because, you know, people remember that, people understand, and they want to work with people that are like helpful and that are nice. So it really is a good thing when you start to like build from a side of like sharing and giving in the content and all the things that you are creating. But it's going to be a long journey. And there were definitely struggles in there for me, especially in terms of like content and posting is definitely one, like in terms of like LinkedIn and all that stuff, where it wasn't as natural as it is now for me. Mm-hmm. And that probably more than posting on YouTube felt like shouting into the void because, you know, I think I have like 20,000 followers on LinkedIn now. I started out with zero, right? I started out where everybody else starts out and where you're absolutely nobody. And then the consistency and the posting over time, the commenting and connecting with other people starts to drive that follower count, starts to drive that those interactions that you're having to get to where I am today, right? And I'm nowhere near the top of like, you know, Salesforce, LinkedIn game kind of thing. Like there's people with way more connections and I'll say influence than me, but you know, you have to start somewhere, right? And I'm happy to be where I am now. And some people may look at me and they're saying like, oh, I want to be where you are. You know, it's just about taking that time, really putting in the hours, and then sharing the things that you care about.
Building an AppExchange business can be isolating. Are you tired of guessing what the right next move is to grow and scale? Don't go it alone. ISV Forge surrounds you with a curated group of fellow ISV founders who are on the same journey. We combine peer accountability with expert-led weekly webinars to help you overcome roadblocks and build a thriving business. Stop guessing and start scaling. Apply for the next cohort today at isvforge.com. That's isvforge.com. Sure. Well, I think you're very humble, which I do appreciate, but I do think you're definitely up there and among some of the top Salesforce voices. And that's why you've been a Salesforce MVP, I think, multiple times now. Correct?
Yeah, I'm going on the third year. Okay. Which I don't know why. Like, come on, kick me out. I don't do much.
Well, I'd like to learn more about that program. So I guess, is it consecutive the past 3 years when you first joined? Or?
Yeah. Becoming an MVP is interesting because it's something that you, it's something that you don't really go after, but you get without notice, right? There are other forces in play, right? Like, okay, some people like actively try to become an MVP, and I don't think that's the right way to go about it. What we've seen, right, and what I think about as an MVP is you're doing interesting things in the community and then you get recognized for it. You don't do those interesting things to become an MVP. So for myself, it's like I like sharing the YouTube content, teaching people about Salesforce development. You know, as a community group leader, I think like a lot of the things that I ended up doing in the community, just because I wanted to, ended up contributing to me becoming an MVP. Right, but even if I didn't get the title, I will continue to be doing all of these things anyway. So, being an MVP is interesting though, because it's like it is a title Salesforce bestows on you from the community and all of that stuff, but you don't really get anything right from it. Maybe get a different section to sit at Dreamforce if you go, but it's a lot of it is just recognition for the time and the work that you've been putting into the community. And I think at that point I was maybe 7 years into like the content stuff already. So it was like, okay, great. You know, this is really cool. And I will continue to do the things that I'm doing and support the community. And, you know, if I continue to be an MVP, that's awesome. Do I think some other people should get it over me? Maybe, maybe not. But yeah, it's been really cool. But there are some perks you get, like to talk to Salesforce internally, and you get to see certain things that just beforehand, so like be able to preview and talk to like product owners about things, and you can end up being like a voice of the community as well. So I especially like to go to these things that I have access to, that where I can talk to Salesforce and voice the opinions of the developers, right? That I can see, right? So like, how do we, if there's going to be changes in, I don't know, the setup, for example, it's like, okay, well, how will this affect developers? Or can we pull this down in our metadata? Can we edit this inside mm-hmm. of code? Because, you know, there's a lot of different areas of Salesforce that you can think about, and you want to make, you know, there's, I'll say, more people on the like admin side of things that will advocate for a lot of those things. You need to make sure to advocate for all sides of Salesforce. So yeah, it's been really interesting to be in some of those conversations and be like, oh, hey, what about like, how does this work in code? Like, how does Agentforce work in code, and how do I deploy it? What does the metadata look like? How can I write this in Apex, right? Run this function or run this agent in Apex. A lot of those questions, like poking the bear a little bit, but making sure that they're staying top of mind on the developer side of things.
Well, I appreciate you poking the bear a little bit for sure. I think, you know, metadata coverage for different metadata types in the metadata API is important. And I think sometimes an afterthought. So I appreciate you poking the bear there.
Yeah.
I'm curious too, do they all, given, your expertise on education, and you're such a known entity in the training world, do they reach out for feedback from you on Trailhead content?
Not as much. That would be not as much, and not as much as I would want to. Like, talk about poking the bear. I've told Salesforce themselves, like, I only have a business, right? Cloud Code only exists because Trailhead is so bad, right? In terms of teaching development content. And you know, they do a good job of the introductory stuff, like, oh, you know, this is a variable, or this is, you know, how to write a trigger, or they go all the way to the other end, like, this is a super crazy complex framework that you should implement on Trailhead, and like, that's it, it's just one article. So I kind of beat them up a little bit on the Trailhead content that they have around development, because it's lacking. I think admin's okay. But there's definitely room for improvement, which is why, you know, all of these workforce development partners exist, is because they see a gap in the learning space, and they are filling it with their business in one way or another. So they generally don't reach out. Well, I won't say that. I've done some like Trailhead review types of things and certification. Mm-hmm. Like when the JavaScript 1 certification was coming out, I helped like test that out. But in terms of like really focusing in on the content, I don't know if it's a priority of Salesforce as a business, even though they have teams around it. You know, they probably have other areas where they're focusing in on a little more.
Yeah, they're pulled in multiple directions. I do think for sure overall, you know, Trailhead is a net win for the community,
yeah,
at large. And but I think that a lot of people don't learn that way from Trailhead, right? I mean, I think Salesforce is doing their best with that, but like you mentioned, there's still a gap for like Cloud Code Academy and others like it to come in and fill the spaces where like Trailhead really can't go as mm-hmm. easily. So I think I think Trailhead's great, but I appreciate that there are folks out there that really aren't going to learn coding practices from that kind of like learning path and just and reading text. And obviously they have the challenges, but I think your videos and your cohort programs are definitely a nice addition.
Yeah, and one thing to add, right? I in total agreement, right? Trailhead is a net win for the community overall. It's how I got started, right? When there weren't mm-hmm. as many YouTube videos or blogs or anything like that that shared best practices in Salesforce. Like that's where I turned to 10 years ago to really get started. So, and in other disciplines, right, another area, like, do you know of a trailhead for HubSpot or a trailhead for, I don't know, ServiceNow? Like all of these things don't, as far as I know, don't really exist, or they started after, right? So trailhead is amazing for getting people the knowledge to help them at least get an introduction, right, in certain areas of Salesforce. So it's been great for me because I can learn a little bit better. I can put the pieces together from, you know, the introduction and the text and see how it all fits together. But I don't know if everybody, I don't know if that's the best way to go about it, which is why, you know, I have been creating this content and other material.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right, let's switch gears here. So I wanted to, one thing I wanted to talk with you about, another thing that's unique, I'd say, about your business is most folks think in terms of either starting a business that's B2B or B2C focused, where you're selling either to businesses or consumers, right? And most companies in the, that are playing in the Salesforce space would fall into the B2B category, I would say, nearly all, really. The SIs are selling to Salesforce customers, which are themselves businesses. And the ISVs are selling also to the Salesforce customers, right, that are businesses. Now, your content and the Cloud Code Academy's cohort programs, I feel like kind of follows a third track that I've heard a few times recently, like a B2P, where it's like business to professionals, right? I mean, no one's really learning Salesforce for, you know, to be a hit at parties on weekends, right? People are learning it for their professional careers.
Let me tell you about Flows and the new upcoming winter release.
So I think, you know, you're selling, it's not really B2C because you're not exactly going to consumers, but you're selling to professionals that are trying to advance their career in one way or another. And I'm curious if that, you'd mentioned how you're starting to engage with, you know, marketing firms and things like that. How has that played a role in your marketing in general, Cloud Code Academy?
It's everything, because you have to meet people for this type of business, right? You totally hit the nail on the head with, we are primarily B2C or B2P, right? So going for these professional types of people. And if we are trying to get in front of these people, we have to reach them where they are, right? And when we talk about professionals, right, they're generally on LinkedIn. And they're, if you're on an Instagram or a TikTok or even Facebook, right, are you interested, or are you looking for like professional content? Are you looking to learn about Salesforce at that time, or are you trying to relax and like see pictures of your friends' cats, right, on Instagram? So there's certain like platforms and areas where you want to focus in on for these types of professional people. And that's a big focus on how we build out and how we think about our business and the marketing, right? So, you know, I mentioned LinkedIn is one of the main drivers because there's generally is a professional social network. And then YouTube is the other main driver because of its search capabilities, right? When you are searching, how do I do a flow loop, right? That's something very specific to Salesforce. And you're in that, I'll say like professional, you're in that Salesforce mindset when you're going after it. So everything we do is focused on this lens of how do we get in front of the right types of people and figuring out where they are. And there's, you know, there's different strategies. There's all these different things that you can do, lead magnets and run ads and all of these things. But it really comes down to like, where are the people that you're looking for? Where do they hang out? Where do they talk? And then are you organically part of that conversation, right? You don't just want to join in like, hey, I'll buy my stuff, right? This is what I sell. It's like, are you actually part of that community? Right? And it could be in Discords, it could be in Slack channels, or, you know, all of these different places. But for any business, right, it doesn't just need to be Cloud Code or you know, Python or anything. It's about finding where your people are and trying to get in front of them, right? And so a channel that works for me may not be the correct one for, you know, your business. But yeah, I'm happy to dive into that deeper, however we can go. Like, marketing is something that I've had to learn as I've started building out Cloud Code. And it's very, it's interesting enough to me now, or like, if I had my way, I would just be coding and making videos all day long. But as a business owner, I've got to like think about and figure out these things now.
It is funny, isn't it? And it's maybe perhaps somewhat ironic becoming an expert in development on a platform that helps businesses do sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. And then realize that down the road, I need to get better at sales and marketing so that I can sell my services or my courses. So that's great. All right. For what I want to talk about next, first, maybe before we dive in, I want to make sure you're familiar. Perhaps not everyone's heard of this before. So are you familiar with AI?
No,
have you heard of that before?
I've never heard of AI before. What is that?
Well, let me just remove that rock that you've been living under, and we can have a chat. I'm just curious how you see AI playing out, specifically in the Salesforce admin and development world, and how it could impact Cloud Code Academy and future courses down the road, right? So because you mentioned you were working with analyzing flow and kind of converting a flow to Apex, right? And perhaps vice versa. And I'm just thinking how over time, do you think we'll use more and more AI interfaces to build out some of the business logic that's stored in, you know, Salesforce and other SaaS applications? And then almost like, you know, maybe the lines will continue to blur between Flow and Apex, similar to how, you know, Apex compiles down to Java, and, you know, we don't really go debug assembly code anymore, right? And I'm wondering, like, will this be a new layer of abstraction above Flow and Apex? And do you think folks will eventually just want to learn, you know, how take courses on prompt engineering, things like that?
Yeah, this is the topic of the year, the month, right? In the next couple of years, especially in the Salesforce ecosystem, AI is going to continue to change how everybody does their work in Salesforce. And then specifically on the like admin, developer, configuration, declarative, you know, development front, it's going to, in my mind, right, a lot of these are my opinions, going to change a lot over the next couple of years, right? I can kind of see it. You can see some like prepping for it. If you look at other industries that can be a little more nimble, you can see the changes happening. All of that being said, I think the Salesforce is going to take a measured approach. And like you're mentioning, we will probably get to a stage where we can prompt a flow creation, a flow generation, right? And I'm seeing a few different like ISVs or you know, apps doing this. I think like Clientelly, I don't know if I'm saying the name right or not, like it's like Clientel, which I want to talk to those people. And if you haven't had them on the podcast, I think you should, because it's basically prompts to Salesforce, right? Or you have the Sierra AI folks who are doing like the MCPs and all that stuff, which are very interesting. And right now we're at like the tip of the iceberg, right? It's like, this is just the start of like 1 year of trying to do this stuff really well. And it's only going to continue to get better. So I think there's going to be a progression of let's be able to prompt flows to get generated or created. Or maybe it's let's be able to prompt business logic that gets created. And you can see the lot, like you can see what is created in a flow-like interface, which is what everybody understands, but maybe under the hood, it's actually Apex, right? It's actually, you know, the Apex that's running. And we can already generate lots of code with like Cursor and Cloud Code and all the different models, right? So we're getting to a point to where we can prompt a lot of things to get created. So in terms of prompt engineering, yes, people will need to learn it. Yes, people will need to be able to understand it. But I also think that the tools will start getting smarter to fill in the gaps that people don't fill in themselves with their prompts, right? Because all of it is context. If you're able to, like, if you're in your Salesforce instance and you say, I want to create a validation rule on opportunity that blocks the user from doing XYZ things, and you talk about a specific custom field you have, right? The LLM, the prompt, the AI should be smart enough to take context from your org, find that specific custom field you're talking about, and then inject it in the prompt. So I think they're going to start getting smarter. Instead of you, me as the individual, needing to say, use this specific field in my opportunity and set it to this exact thing, right? Because then I could have just typed it out myself and it would have been faster.
But yeah.
I think they're going to start injecting more context into the overall, like I say, prompt overall process so that they get smarter. All of that being said, right, like AI is going to start doing more of the admins and developers' job, but you as an individual, you will not be successful if you have no idea what is going on under the hood, like what is getting created, which is why I teach a lot of, yes, AI is like generating lots of Apex and creating lots of code. But if you can't read it, if you can't understand what's actually happening, then you shouldn't use it at all. And you should spend the time to learn. A lot of it is foundational, a lot of it's basics, to understand what is getting created. So lots of students come to me, literally it's like a every week type of topic on the office hours that I host, where it's like, oh, is AI going to take my job? Oh, is AI going to do this and that? It's like, it's going to do some parts of your job and make you faster, but you need to then do the parts that it can't do. And to do that, you need to understand what it's creating, what it's generating. Similar thing for admins and the flow side of things. If we're able to use, or even not even on the flow side, if you're able to use AI to generate an object, right? You say, oh, you know, create this type of object, and it uses like the wrong field type. It creates like a multi-staged like object process, or it doesn't do connect the objects correctly together. And you're just like, yeah, click, 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 vibe configuration, right? Everything looks good. And you don't understand that it's set up incorrectly. Then it's going to bite you in the butt, right? Like either you're getting fired, somebody else is being brought in who knows what they're doing and can read this stuff. So it's important to make sure that you still understand the fundamentals with AI, right? Use it as a tool to help speed you up. Don't use it as a crutch. So yeah, there's a ton in there. I could be singing a different tune on our 100th episode, right? But that's where I see it going, at least in the near term, right? That it's going to be a collaborative effort, but people that don't understand what's getting generated will be pushed aside, right?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think any developer that has been kind of caught in that in a death spiral with, you know, Claude Code, Cursor, Client, any of these coding assistants, that sometimes they just get in a loop and you realize, okay, forget it. I'll just do it myself. And if you don't have the skill set to just say, forget it, I'll jump in and do it myself, I think you could really be in a lot of trouble. So I agree with you that, you know, learning the fundamentals is still very important. We're still learning arithmetic, in school, despite having calculators, right? So I completely agree that you got to have that base foundation of education that Cloud Code Academy provides. So that feels like a good place for us to wrap up. But before we do, again, I can't imagine anybody listening doesn't already know how to get in touch with you or where to find you online. But just in case, where can folks go to learn more about Cloud Code Academy or get in touch with you?
Yeah, best places to talk with me are probably LinkedIn. So I'm Walters954 on most social media platforms. And you can, you know, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I love having conversations with folks, or it's also Walters954 on YouTube. If you're interested in learning about development, we've got multiple tracks in terms of like fundamentals of Apex, integrations. We've got an LWC program coming soon. So if you're interested in learning more about development, regardless of your role, right, we've got people who are consultants that learn development, admins that want to become developers, admins that just want to be more confident in talking to developers. And we have lots of people coming through our programs. So if you're interested in any of that, you can check it out at cloudcodeacademy.com or just shoot me a message and we'll go from there. So yeah, Scott, I appreciate you bringing me on, us talking. You know, it's all fun stuff and good stuff to really catch up and talk through this journey that, you know, we've been interacting with each other for so long for now, and to see it, like, you know, come to these it's like these different places that we could have been in that you would never imagine, you know, five years ago. So that's really cool.
I agree. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Warren, and I look forward to our conversation on the 100th episode.
Should be fun.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Cheers, man.
All righty. Later. Bye.
Are you looking to connect with the most dedicated founders and builders in the Salesforce ecosystem? The AssemblyLine audience is made up of the exact ISV partners and entrepreneurs you're trying to reach. We're opening up a few sponsorship slots to partner with brands that can truly help our listeners succeed. If you're ready to connect with the leaders of the AppExchange, you can learn more at AssemblyLine.com/sponsor. That's AssemblyLine.com/sponsor.